desperate, we trust you. If you need to just take a book and not throw $5 in the box, we'll get Leo will cover you afterwards or something. So, but it's really just a 5-week study, and so we really want to encourage everybody. It's one of those that will move your heart. The goal of our next 5 weeks is not to make us all feel guilty as Americans because we got too much money. It's to today specifically, it's to give us perspective on why God has blessed us with what we have. It's really not just so we can acquire more and have a lot of stuff. It's so that we can give and use it and help other people. So we'll be talking about that for the next 5 weeks. Let me just put up here. Whoops, I went one too far. We'll get to Indy in a second. Let's try perspective. As I was reading through the book, one of the things that it says is that some churches will be using this in connection with their special missions contribution. Well, we're not actually using it in connection with it, but I certainly might as well mention it since we're thinking about how other countries need financial assistance, but also we're thinking about how much they need the gospel of Jesus as well. And so once a year in our fellowship of churches, particularly in New England, we give a special missions contribution. Our focus particularly is in Europe. Other churches around the world might do Africa or the Middle East. But we focus on the European outreach and work. And so I did want to make sure you knew, since we're a new church, many of you have done this for a while, but we typically have a goal of trying to give 10 times what we normally give on a Sunday, which is quite a sacrifice. I'm not really good at math, but if you normally give $10 a week, that would be to try to, that one time, to give, you know, 10 times that, $100. If you give $100, $1,000. Anyway, so that's something you have to think about and plan for. You probably won't just have it fall out of the sky. So we're just asking everybody to pray. We want to give you a little warning. We're going to try to help ourselves a couple of different ways. One, on July 25th, we're going to have a special missions yard sale. And that's going to be at the Martins home. In fact, if someone wants to be even in charge of organizing that, see me afterwards. But we're going to all take some stuff over there that maybe is not a need, but more of a want that we had and has passed. And so we'll have a special missions yard sale on the 25th. The actual day that we're planning to give is September 13th. And, of course, we'll be collecting it, I'm sure, for that whole month as well. So just a couple of dates to keep in mind with what we can do with all that God's given us to help other people. And this has nothing to do with the book or special missions, but several people have been asking me, when are we going to have an outdoor service? So since I'm putting dates up there, I'll just tell you, on July the 12th, we're going to go to Colt State Park for an outdoor service and a picnic. That'll be July 12th. I don't know why that hit me as I was telling you dates. But anyway, back to perspective and our book. I want to just share, hopefully many of you have already read the chapter, and so I won't just kind of re-preach what we already read, but let me highlight each week. There's a different part of the world that's highlighted. What would it be like to live in, and this week it's India. And I'm grateful that Jim has been there. I never have. I have been fortunate enough to be in the Philippines, to be in South Africa, to be in some places where there are some very, very, very poor people. But the book just said some really pretty unbelievable stuff, almost too much to comprehend. India is the same size as the United States, but it's got about 3 times the population. So we think there's a little overcrowding sometimes in our city or in our country. India is about 1/7 of the world's population. Imagine 1 billion people with way less than we have all crammed together trying to live life and survive. This third world country, as Jim already mentioned, once you get out in the countryside, people make about $2.50 a day. That's their wage. Most of them have 2 sets of clothing. Of course, they don't have a washer and a dryer, so they'll wash by hand. You'll wear one pair of clothes for 3 or 4 days, then you'll switch to the other one. That one gets washed, and they don't have a whole host of clothes to pick from. An average meal on an average day would be a bowl of rice, not even 3 times a day, no snacks in between. If you're living out in the countryside in the poverty, it's a different world than we live. In fact, it was interesting. They had a little section where they talked about luxuries. What are luxuries in India? And the first thing they mentioned was school. You have to pay to go to school. Most people in India cannot afford to go to school. It's a luxury to even get an education Certainly, that's not always the way I viewed it. They showed a picture of a family on a moped, five people on a moped. That's a luxury in India, to own a moped where you can stick your kid on your shoulders and your wife on the back and another one hanging off on one side and another on the other. I mean, again, once you get out in the countryside, I've never even been in a car. I mean, public transportation in the big cities, in the countryside, you know, most will spend their whole lives and never even ride in a car or in a station. Certainly most have never had any drink that contains caffeine. They don't go to the movies. They don't go to musicals. They don't go to shows. Most people don't even know the concept of a vacation. In fact, they were talking about how even in the church, occasionally different churches will get together for a retreat, and that's just like the most amazing. That's their vacation. That's like the most amazing thing that they can travel, you know, to another town and meet with other disciples. They consider that a vacation. But the idea of going off, enjoying a night away, that's really a foreign concept. Most of the homes have five or six family members that live together. Every single one of them works. And if one of them loses their job, gets injured, can't work anymore, it throws everyone into jeopardy. In fact, even life situation. I mean, just to read about how it's very common for people to kidnap children to beg on the street to try to get more money. It's just a different, tense, crazy world. And God has allowed us to live in America. I was reading through some of the challenges. Jim mentioned one of them, but I just want to tell you, I'm not man enough to do every challenge every day. I mean, I'm just trying to get brave enough to do like two or three a week if I can. But you know, he mentioned just stay in one room like all day Saturday. Don't go to different rooms of the house, just because that's what most of them live in. They live in one room. $2.50 for a day, that was another one that he mentioned. Here are a few others that are mentioned. Only travel by public transportation. What if you tried that this week, or I tried that this week? Again, I'm not really man enough to pull that one off, but that was a challenge. Give up something that's a luxury item for you and save the money for special missions contribution. That was one of the challenges this week. And actually, I really like this one. Take something that you do have that's extra to church service and give it to somebody else that you think could benefit from it. We could definitely all do that. You can even go back and do that one for next week if you do that one. Skip a meal and pray for the people that are poor and even save the money in that way. And so there are a whole host of challenges that are firing at you. I think it would just be good for all of us. Let's try to find two or three a week that will help work on our heart and soften them and give us perspective. The other thing, there was just a whole myriad of scripture verses. And again, Jim's mentioned one of them. And I'm going to actually just do a bit of a shorter sermon on just one of the verses. But some of them that just struck me as I read through this chapter. In Luke chapter 12 is the story, many of you may remember it, about a man who was doing really well financially. And so he said, hey, you know, my business is going well. My harvest is going well. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to tear down my little barns, and I'm going to build bigger barns, and then I'm going to have more, and I'm going to expand, and this is going to be great. And God says, well, hang on. This very night, your soul is going to be required of you. And you know, as I was reading the story before I got to this soul being required of you, I thought, that's the American dream. That's what we all want to do. We all want to do well financially and tear down our little barns and build bigger barns and make more money and expand and grow. And God says, in fact, God says, you fool. Time out. Watch out. Watch out what you're giving your life for. It's a powerful passage on perspective. In James chapter 5 and verse 5, he says, you've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You've fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. Again, what I like to do when I read the Bible is I like to apply those verses to like everybody else. But the truth is, I got to stop. And I mean, really, there's nobody better in all the world that applies to than Americans. A whole host of people in India haven't fattened themselves on self-indulgence. That's not what they do. They survive. But we can very easily get into what do I want and what can I have and how do I feel. And then there's several verses that just talk about because God has blessed us in so much, we should be generous to others. And so Malachi 3, most of us have read that. Bring in the whole tithe so that others can be blessed by your generosity. Test me, and I'm going to even bless you through that. In Luke 21, we're all consistently blown away by this poor widow that had just a couple of pennies, but she gave it all to try to help other people. And so the idea of perspective isn't, again, just to mope around in guilt or like, oh, you're trying to make us feel bad. No, the idea is God has blessed us. We can use what we have and be generous. That's the idea of the chapter. But actually, the one verse that kind of jumped out me the most, I'm going to use as the text, is in Luke chapter 16. If you have your Bible, you can turn there. If you don't, you can follow along on the screen. But I want to just talk about our perspective for just a few minutes from Luke chapter 16. And I learn that I actually have enough, that God alone is enough. In Luke chapter 16, we'll start in verse 19. This is Jesus talking, and he says, "There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores, longing to eat himself from the table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried." How far did I go down there? All right, let's see. "In Hades, where he was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, 'Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue because I'm in agony in this fire.'" I'm not sure how far I went down, so we'll just go there. "But Abraham replied, 'Son, remember that in your lifetime you received good things while Lazarus received bad things. But now he's comforted here and you're in agony. And all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been set in place so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us.' He answered, 'Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so that they will not also come to this place of torment.' Abraham replied, 'They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them.' 'No, Father Abraham,' he said, 'but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent.' He said to him, 'If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead.'" You know, I almost hesitate to start this way. Probably no church in all of the world is talking about this song today. But I listened to a song this past week called "Big Rock Candy Mountain." Anybody ever like even heard of that one before? Okay, took me way back to elementary school. Now, they actually cleaned this one up and changed the lyrics around, I found out. But I heard this song, "Big Rock Candy Mountain." But then actually later on, "Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?" Have any of you seen that movie? That was a little bit more of a... Okay, so it's like the same four people. All right, that's all right. But Mervy did not see that one, but I think you should, Mervy. I think that would be helpful, okay? But anyway, they brought it back for a reprise. But for some reason, I listened to this song this week, and it's actually a hobo that's singing about what heaven is going to be like. And it's got, and so the hobo, you know, he's traveling along, he has a tough life, and it's just he's just dreaming of you lay around in a hammock all day, and you go, like, right when you walk in, you get, like, whatever, you know, you get your smoothie with the, you know, whatever your drink of choice is, whatever it is, that, you know, it's, there's chocolate ice cream as you go along, and of course you don't gain any weight when you eat it there, and so I just, you know, where a bum can stay for many a day, and he won't need any money. Where you can sleep all day, where jails are made of tin, you walk, you know, the policemen have peg legs so they can't chase you and run you out of places. I mean, he just sings this song about what heaven is going to be like for a hobo. Isn't it going to be wonderful there? Anyway, I listened to this song. In fact, it's not, they have like cigarette trees there and they have, you know, whiskey flowing through the river. So, you know, hobos like a few different things than the average person, but... that would just kind of like be like what heaven was for them. And anyway, I listened to this song and I thought, you know what we all do? I think we all do. We kind of make heaven out to be what we want it to be. Like if you really love sports, you imagine heaven just being like 24 hours of basketball constantly, you know? And you're playing with whoever your favorite person is, you know, Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan. And that's kind of what heaven is to me. Or if it's soccer, we just kind of imagine. Or if you're like really into music, it's kind of like a, you know, a country music concert. You know, that's what heaven's going to be like. And it's just going to be so great. And they're all going to, and we kind of make heaven out a bit in our image. And so I thought to myself, just for a few minutes, we'll let you indulge yourself as well. I thought, what would heaven be like if I kind of got to make up the rules for heaven. You know, if heaven's just going to be like in Rhode Island, I thought, you know, what if, I've had three daughters and they've all gone through, what if heaven was like, they pay you to send your kids to go to college, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And instead of you figuring out how to pay for all that, they actually pay you. And not only does the colleges pay you for your kids to go, actually your kids pay you to go too, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so you're just like kind of making money and life is good. You know, we were in a traffic jam the other day in Providence, and I thought, heaven would be kind of like, you know, there's this massive traffic jam, and you have like your own lane that only your car can drive down. This is kind of what heaven is going to be like for me. It's going to be, you know, a cool concert, little big screen TV, a nice drink on the side. You eat as much as you want. You don't gain any weight. I mean, this is kind of, but you know what I thought as I was thinking of the hobo's heaven and even my heaven that I was creating, I thought that's really, really twisted and misguided. That's not really what heaven is all about. That's not really, God is not just trying to give you every indulgence in life forever and ever. In fact, I'm pretty convinced you wouldn't really be all that happy if there were cigarette trees everywhere and whiskey flowing down and all there was chocolate chip ice cream everywhere. I'm not sure that that would make us happy eternally, but sometimes we think it would. And so I read this story, and actually what this story says is it's almost the exact opposite of the Big Rock Candy Mountain is what God says, you know, this life and even the next life is going to be. And so without going into great detail, there are obviously hundreds of contrasts in this story. You have a rich man and a poor man. You have one who's covered in the finest garments and probably has hundreds of sets of clothes and suits. You have one who's covered in sores. And the Bible goes so far as to tell you that dogs came up and licked on him. You can't get in a much worse state than that. You have one man who's feasting, and right outside the door you have a man who is starving. I mean, there are all these contrasts. And so I began to think of a few of the other contrasts that came to my mind as I read through. And I want you to think about it with me. Are you more interested in a name or a title? What is it that you're going for in life? Do you want a name or a title? There's a little bit of debate if you go and read some of the commentaries as to whether this story is like a true story or a parable. Not that it really matters. My opinion is this is probably a parable. It certainly reads like a parable. It doesn't. But the one difference is, I was going to say all parables. Most parables, I can at least say, don't usually put a person's name in there. They'll just say there was a rich man or there was a beggar or there was a sower who went out. Most times they, and I'm going to tell you here in just a minute why I think that it did put his name in. But my guess is this is a parable, although of course there are people who do live in wealth and in poverty just like these people. But it's interesting that if it's a parable, this is, at least to my knowledge, the only parable where someone has a proper name. And when you think about it, I don't know that this happens in every single situation, but in our family, when you're going to name a child, you sit down and give it some thought. You don't just think, you know, hey, I like Engelbert Humperdinck, you know, let's stick that one. You sit down and think, do we like Fred? Do we like Mary? Why do we like this? What does that name mean? It takes a little time, and you name them for a reason. And you kind of even would like them to know what that reason is. A name means something. Especially back in the Bible days, actually the name Lazarus meant, God is my help. It'd be a pretty cool name. It means something. We don't name people Jezebel today because we know, ooh, that means something scary or dark. We don't name a whole lot of guys Judas because that means something. So there's something in a name that goes along even kind of with our identity, right? But what's interesting is, the rich man's identity was what? He was rich. And that's what he seems to have like gone after his whole life. He wanted to be known as the rich man. And when he died, he was known as the rich man. And that what I think we're taught in America actually is not to go after a good name as much as to go after being on a, you know, state championship football team or a way better, you know, be a Super Bowl champion or be a CEO of a major corporation or, you know, be an astronaut and walk on the moon. I mean, get a title that you get to wear around that's like really cool. I mean, when you sit down at a dinner party, you know what happens if you're just standing around, you meet new people? What do they always say? What is it that you do? Who are you? And can you imagine what it'd be like to say, well, I walked on the moon. I was an astronaut. You know, I cured polio. You know, I was a doctor. You know, I mean, whoa. People are impressed with our titles. But you know, I've been in some of those circles, and sometimes if you have to say, well, I'm unemployed, you know, there's a whole different feel to that. Like, ooh, I don't have anything that sounds impressive or important. Or try this one. Try sitting in a circle with eight people and saying, I'm a minister. There's like this hush that always goes over the crowd. They're all thinking back to, what did I just say a few minutes ago? Oh, no, I was telling that story, you know. And always at the end of this hush, there's somebody that says, is that actually a full-time job? It just doesn't have the title, like, you know, like Super Bowl champion or, you know, astronaut or... But you know what God's saying is, it's really, really, really important that you wear His name, that you have His identity. In fact, even that whole idea of you can be called a Christian, you can wear the name of Christ. I mean, there's nothing better than that. What is it that we're going after? A rich man really went after being rich, and he got that title. And in the end, he thought, oh my goodness, I went after the wrong thing. What are you going after? Are you going after a good name? Are you going after the identity of who you really are with Christ? Or are you going after these titles that the world's calling you to that are all going to burn up and disappear one day? The rich man and Lazarus, it's got some deep thoughts. Here's another one. I know I preach about this often, so I'll be really quick on this point. But the other thing that did just at least jump out at me is that one of the contrasts is that Lazarus was at least a part of some kind of community, whereas the rich man seemed to just have hundreds and maybe even thousands of admirers. And the reason that I thought of it, again, it's a very small point, and it's short wording, but I think it's important. It says that Lazarus was taken every morning and laid at the rich man's gate. Well, somebody had to take him there. Apparently he was so weak, so sick, that he couldn't even get up and walk himself, and he had some group of friends, a community, that actually cared enough about him that took him, probably the only person in the whole area that could help him financially with all of his health problems was this one guy. And so they thought, well, we can't help him. We wish we could, but we're going to carry him right over there every day, and hopefully someday this guy will help him out. He had some friends. Now, I'm sure when the rich man died, he had thousands of people that dressed up real nicely and went to his funeral and probably had, you know, flowery words that were said and nice music in the background, lots of handshakes. But, you know, were they friends or were they acquaintances? And I just want to ask all of us, what are we building? I mean, if Donald Trump dies, I'm guessing a few people will be at his funeral. If a president dies, and I'm not saying don't go to their funeral, I'm just saying, what are we building? Are you building a community of people, or are you trying to go after things? And so you have lots of acquaintances, but you know, we've talked about the one another passages in the Bible, is that God has them there for a reason. He wants us to build something real, not just see you on Sunday, hope it goes well this week, but living in community together. It's the way He created us to be. And so we have encourage one another and love one another and serve one another and pray for one another and confess your sins to one another and, you know, on and on and on the list goes, because He wants us to be in community. The rich man was kind of on his own, making all his money, going for it. And at the end of the day, God says, wow, you totally messed it up. How does the richest man in the world totally mess it up? We don't really see it that way, but God did. And then here's the one I actually want to camp out on longest. One of the contrasts in this story is that one man was patiently enduring, and the other one was pretty much entitled in all that he thought and did. You know, this is an interesting word for us, entitlement, right? We've all heard that before. And I wrote these questions because we don't want to actually start fights in the room, but let's just think for a second. Don't scream this out. Like, the first, well, let's... Second one, which generation do we believe is the most entitled? It's always the younger generation, right? I've never heard any person in the history of my life say, my generation was the most entitled. and we were the most spoiled, and we were the most arrogant, and we demanded the most. And no generation says that. It's always the older generation that says, all those kids, they're so entitled, and they think they deserve this, and they deserve that. And we never see it in ourselves. In fact, this one would definitely start the fight. Which gender is the most entitled? Usually all the women think the men, and the men think the women, and, you know, we always, oh, I can't believe, you know, he feels or she. That we never kind of look in the mirror and say, that's me. But I think what this book is trying to say to most of us that live in America, that's you. That's me. We feel like, hey, well, I got more than most people in the world. I deserve it. Hey, I work 40 hours a week. It didn't just all fall in my lap. I'm out there. And so I started a little list here. See if you can relate to any of it. Well, first of all, let me define it. Entitlement means that I have a right to something. Here are a few examples. How dare that policeman stop me? He doesn't understand the circumstances of my life. There were 10 people that went by me the last 5 minutes going way faster than I was. How dare he do that to me? How could my boss give her a raise and not me? I have been here longer. I work harder. She leaves before I do. I get here before she does. You know, oh, he knows, she must know, you know, somebody in his family. I'm entitled to the raise. We complain about the littlest things. I mean, we get some food at a restaurant. My French fries aren't as warm as they should be. And I'm fine if you can luck into warm French fries. I'm fine. But we just have this, how dare they do that to me? I paid my good money for that. And this little 18-year-old who probably didn't even get any training just got thrown in. And they're making, you know, $4 an hour. And you're making, you know, $50,000 a year. How dare they not realize who I am and give me better food and better service and better. It's a really scary thing that we got. Like, I deserve something special because of who I am. And that was the mentality of the rich man. It was pretty scary. In fact, even in hell, this is what struck me. Even in hell, did you get that? In hell, you'd think the first thing you'd say is, I am so sorry I lived a horrible life, Jesus. You think you would say something about your salvation or about the sorrow for the way you live. The first thing, you know, what's really interesting, the rich man talks a lot. We're going to notice here in a second, Lazarus doesn't say a thing. The rich man just talks and talks and talks. And the first thing he says is, will you please send Lazarus to get some water to help me out because it's hot down here. What? Send a servant over here to help me out. That's what he'd been used to. I'm entitled to cooler stuff than this. You're like, time out. Even this whole thing about, you know, resurrect someone from the dead and send them to my family. And perhaps he had a little evangelistic spirit in him. Amen if he did. But the whole thing, like, I'm entitled to a little resurrection. I want more than just Moses and the prophets down there. I'm entitled to getting a resurrection and having that. And God's like, actually, no, you're not. You're actually not entitled to anything more than Lazarus was. And Lazarus got a whole lot less than you did down there. But you know what he did with it? He endured it patiently. You know, you read these books, these commentaries, and I wish I'd seen it before, but you know what they all talk about and focus on for a long time? I've really never even seen this. They all talk about the silence of Lazarus. I mean, can you imagine if you'd been Lazarus, and you'd been sick and in poor and horrific conditions your whole life, finally, whatever heaven's like, finally you made it. This rich man that never tried to help you, and he's jabbering away about, send Lazarus over here to get me some water so I can get cooled down. If you'd been Lazarus, what would you have said? I would have gone off on him. You didn't do diddly squat for me. What is your problem? You don't deserve any water now. I mean, that'd kind of be the way I would feel. You know what Lazarus said? Nothing. He said nothing. His attitude was, God's will be ultimately done. On earth or in heaven or wherever else it is. And if I have to suffer with dogs licking on me, then that's what I got to do, and I'm going to try and do it with as much joy as I possibly can. He didn't say, God, I deserve better. What's your problem? How come you haven't given me more? Where's the girl I've been looking for all my life? I mean, he didn't say any of those things. He patiently endured and trusted God that if he lived his way, it would prevail. Do you endure patiently no matter what you go through? Do I? Or do we feel entitled to what I want, when I want it, yesterday, now, more, the American dream, the American way? Here's the last difference. Contrast between the two, compassion for God's world or a preoccupation with our world. What do we have? Compassion for God's world or a preoccupation with our world. You know what? When I read this story, what struck me, and this is intense. As we live on this earth, both of these people desperately needed help. In our terminology, from disciples. The really, 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 really poor, hurting Christian, he needs our help. He needs our love. He needs our attention. Whether he's living in America or in India or Africa or wherever, and we got to have a heart for those that are suffering and figure out some ways to help. We just have to. We can't just sit in our luxury and our first world and not think about those that are hurting in third worlds or even all around us. But I think sometimes when we read the story, that's all we focus on. You know what what struck me as I read the story is the rich man actually needed more help than the poor man did. He needed spiritual help. When I look at rich people, I don't think they need a lot of help. This story tells me, oh, Jimmy, they need a lot of help. They're actually in way worse shape than beggars on the street getting licked on by dogs. They're in way worse shape. Wow. I can't just be preoccupied with my world and my stuff. I got to have compassion for the world that's out there. The physically poor, and actually even more so, the spiritually poor that are all around us, that are going to end up where this guy ended up one day. It's important that we see it God's way, not just our way. I think this, just in one week, has begun to open my eyes and my heart. And the call here, at least in chapter 1, is, first of all, let's just get a perspective. I can't solve problems. I certainly don't even understand all of them, nor am I living this out perfectly. But get a perspective on what's really important. And there's this guy named Lazarus, whose name meant God is my help, who screams out something spiritual that we all need to hear. And as we close, you know what struck me is I started off with this big rock candy mountain, which we all kind of have this that we want to go to. But then I thought about Jesus' mountain that he climbed at the end of his life. It actually wasn't full of chocolate chip ice cream and fun rides and sugar plums. It was actually, it had a cross at the top, Calvary Hill. He exchanged his mountain that he could have had, big title, money, power, glory, he exchanged that for a cross. And in that action, he called us to exchange our mountain for his mountain. That our lives can't just be devoted to the pursuit of money and rest and glory and fame. That we have to go actually after the same kinds of things he did, like sacrifice and service, generosity, actually giving it all away, not trying to hoard it all for ourselves. And so as we begin this study, let's let it hit our hearts that God has blessed us in amazing ways, not because we deserve it or we're entitled to it, but we can then pass it on and help others and spend a life giving it away financially, physically, and spiritually to those that desperately need it all around us. I think I've told you this already, but let me just share it one last time. Anita and I are leaving for this next week. We're going to actually be at a wedding at the end of the week, and most of you know that I lost my mom recently. We're going to check on my dad on a quick drive, well, a 24-hour drive to Arkansas first. That's it will be kind of quick, but the speed limit, but quick. But anyway, we'll be back. But Murphy's actually going to preach next Sunday. And one of the reasons that I'm excited about that is next week's focus is on what it would be like to actually live in Africa and to come from Africa. And Murphy's not just speaking in theory, it's where he's from. So I think he'll have some powerful things to share. Read this second chapter, but let's start today by getting a perspective that God has blessed us so much, we have to humble up and be a blessing to others. Amen. Thanks for listening.